Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call talks with the people in Charlottesville and Albemarle County who are making a difference. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being with us this morning. We have a great guest today. First time on the show, Spencer Shanholtz from UVA's Weldon Cooper Center. He's a research and policy analyst here to share with us all the info you ever wanted to know about the census, both the history, some misconceptions, and talk about current events and this current administration's initiatives with the census. Good morning, Spencer.
Morning.
Thanks for coming in.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Your first time on the Wake Up Call. I appreciate folks who are always willing to dip their feet into the water here. So Spencer, working at the Weldon Cooper Center as a research and policy analyst in the demographics group, what make somebody get working in demographics?
Well, I started out in geography, looking at kind of regional statistics, and then that led me down a path into urban planning. That's what my degree's in, and then I got really into the numbers behind urban planning, and here I am working with demographics. So,
well, I appreciate that, because somebody's got to do all the work and the numbers for the rest of us who just wait to be handed the information.
For sure.
So let's talk about the census. Census 2020 has been in the news a lot, certainly in 2019, if not a little further back, because of the current administration and how they wanted to proceed with it. But let's go back a little further into history. What was the first time that the census in the United States was used, and why?
So the census was constitutionally mandated from the beginning. So the first census was done in 1790. And the purpose is really kind of what it is today, the fundamental part of it, which is to apportion House seats, create those districts for the Congress. And to distribute funding. The ways they've gone about doing that and asking different questions throughout time has changed. But I think from the beginning, one of the other things that they were looking at was really to just get a grasp of how many people there were in the early country, really assess our kind of potential.
Was there ever... you talk about counting the number of people who were here, right? Was that its only purpose? Let me rephrase that. You were talking about counting the number of people who were here so that they could get an idea of the number of people in the country and sending people to Washington, D.C., right? Was there ever another purpose than those two?
So really that was the fundamental purpose. And like I just said, there's been different times where they've kind of added additional questions or taken questions away, really to kind of, for a period of time, they, especially around the Great Depression, they added a lot of economic questions, to just kind of gauge how the country was doing, during and after the Depression. So the main purpose is really for representation and money, constitutionally. But we use the data that we get from it for a whole type of all kinds of different things, from research to those purposes.
But tell me about the Great Depression. What were they doing then? You talk about the questions that they added.
Yeah. So for a period of time, they added some questions about how many children have you had in your lifetime, or they started asking some questions about income at that point. That's kind of shifted over to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, We have a whole nother kind of government agency, I guess you could say, that does that does economic numbers that's separate from the census, and that's kind of changed over time. So they do more of those jobs numbers that you see, you know, each month, the BLS. But the census as we're talking about it now, that's done every 10 years, is really a complete count with some supplemental questions. But the fundamental purpose is to just get a count.
So I'm old enough that I should have, I mean, that I did, I can't remember, complete my census in 2010. But I don't remember what the questions were. What are the questions on the census?
So right now, the questions they ask, so you're going to get one, each household will get a census form. And, you know, one person will fill out that form for every person in that household. So for every person in the household, you'll have list their age, their sex. It's going to ask their Hispanic origin, race, the relationship to the householder, which is the person filling out the form. So whether it's a son, daughter, just roommate. And then lastly, it'll ask the homeownership status. So are you renting or owning? And those are fundamentally what the only questions that are asked to everyone.
So that's it.
Mm-hmm.
How much money you make, not there. That's already switched over to another governmental agency.
Those types of questions... up until, I believe it was 2006, there was a census long form, which was a longer census, which asked those more, you know, household income, household value, how long have you lived in your home, those types of things were sent to a portion of census takers. So that would be not a count, but more of a survey, an estimate. In 2005, 2006, the Census Bureau broke that off and created the American Community Survey. And they do that every year. So they send out a portion, you know, they send out about one in every 36 individuals in the country will get this form, longer form, very detailed, that they fill out and send back. And then the census does their magic and kind of takes those numbers and creates a estimate of the population. If that makes sense.
The goal being 100% of all people living in America, not American citizens, all people within, I can't even say U.S. border because there are other locations, correct? What other locations?
Yeah, so I don't want to get the ACS mixed up with the census because the census, every 10-year census does count everybody, and that's really important that it counts everyone. Everyone living in the U.S. is the goal, is the mandate of the census, not just citizens. But yeah, it also counts people that are deployed overseas.
Okay.
Are counted in the census. Those people are counted in the home base in the United States that they are based out of. And actually, those that are based out of the country are not counted in the census.
They're not.
They're counted as overseas population. So they are counted in the census, I guess you could say, but they're not used in formulations for funding or anything on that source. Okay. They're a separate pool because ultimately the goal is for representation and for funding. And it's going to count you where you live. Ideally, you're supposed to be counted where you live or sleep most of the time.
Okay. But doesn't the census count other parts of the world than the 50 states of the United States?
So it counts, the 50 states, you know, District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and our island territories are counted as, you know, in people, our population in the census. But then there's a separate category of our overseas population, people that are U.S. citizens that are living other places. So that'll be counted in the total number, but it really, when you get down into the weeds and look at location specific,
right,
that's what really matters to a lot of the communities is how many do you have in your specific area? Because that's going to determine how much funding, you know, your representation.
Got it.
Yeah.
Again, our guest today, is Spencer Shanholtz. He's from UVA's Weldon Cooper Center for Public Services. We're talking about the census. We'll be discussing Census 2020. And we're just getting started with a little bit of the history and the purpose of the census. You know, doing a little bit of homework on this, I found some really cool things. The U.S. is not the only country doing a census. And it's not, I mean, the census goes back hundreds, millions of years, right?
Yeah, the census is not something that's new or unique
to
the U.S.
We didn't invent the census.
No, no, no. This concept of counting people is very, you know, been fundamental, you know, going way back, you know, to the Babylonian Empire.
Yeah, I found the Babylonian Empire takes the first known census, I guess millions of years was a little stretch, in 3800 BCE. Counting livestock and quantities of butter, honey, milk, wool, and vegetables.
And I really think that that's kind of fundamentally what we try and do today. We're just trying to count how many people we have so that we can distribute our resources effectively.
2 CE, China's Han Dynasty records the oldest surviving census data, showing a population of 57.7 million people living in 12.4 million households. That's crazy.
Yeah.
We still have the data from that. Here's one that I like. In 1400, without a written language, the Incas used a system of knots on strings made from llama and alpaca hair to record census data and administer their empire.
Yeah, we've come a long way from that, for sure. We've come a long way.
That's not what's going to happen in 2020?
No. This year, the census, this is the first year that the census will be available online to be taken. So we've gone a huge jump from doing knots. Now we're doing, you know, you can go on the internet to fill out your census form.
What does the census cost?
So the census this year, the estimated cost is about, I think it's like $15.6 billion. And that's spread out over the course of the 10 years in between the census, obviously.
So that's not just this year.
No.
It's not going to cost that to send people out to count.
Yeah, the majority of the money is spent in the years right before leading up, the 2 or 3 years leading up to the census, but really, the work is going to start in 2021 for the 2030 census, and it's got to start all over again.
I read that the cost is 25% more than the estimate and 3 times more than what it cost in 2000. Is that just inflation? What is that? Why is that?
So a lot of it is inflation. A lot of it is that they estimated it's gone up all throughout time just because our population's increased and we needed more resources and more people to, you know, accurately count them. But they estimated a lot lower this year as a factor of these technological advances. So the early estimates were smaller than that, around 15 billion. Kind of equal to the 2010 census, saying that we're not going to increase much because of the new technical capacity. We won't need to hire as many people and so forth.
Again, our guest today is Spencer Shanholtz. As we talk about the census, Spencer is a research and policy analyst at UVA's Weldon Cooper Center. Let's talk about some of the misconceptions, because certainly with the current administration, they wanted to put a question on the census, and that's been a lot of time in the past year. But what was that question that was the goal? You spoke about what the questions will be on there, right? Who lives in the house? How they're related to the person filling out the form, what is their age, sex, and gender, et cetera. What was the question that they asked to put on the form?
So last year, the Commerce Department, who runs the census, put forth each year, you know, a few years before the census, they put forth any changes they want to make to the census or any new questions or any you know, to Congress for them to look at. And last year they proposed that we add a citizenship question. A lot of the purposes were behind that were said to be to hold up the Voting Act. And the specific wording of the question would have been or was proposed to be, you know, is this person a citizen of the United States? And that would have been asked on every person that lives in the household, not only the householder.
And so there was question as to whether or not what the intent was for that and whether there was more than just the Voting Rights Act as intention from the administration. And we'll get back to this as to whether and how it proceeded, but it will not be on the census.
No, it was ruled, struck down by the federal judge, by the Supreme Court earlier this year, that it should not be, you know, included, based on the reasoning that the administration put forth.
What was the final vote?
I'm not sure exactly. It was very close on the Supreme Court. I know it was within one justice.
I think it was 5-4.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the misconceptions that a lot of people have as to the census, because I think there's more than one blog article. What's the proper term? You can go to the Weldon Cooper Center statchatva.org.
Yeah, that's kind of our, at the demographics group at the Cooper Center, our outlet to talk about really what we like to talk about. Kind of mini, we call it like a web series as opposed to a blog, really. So they're really like research papers that we do, and we kind of dig deep into a topic. But yeah, I wrote a few on the census, and you can go on there and look at those for some really detailed information.
So think of statistics and chatting about it. So it's statchatva.org. And that's a lot of effort that you put into those, and then you release them to everybody. And you've already got multiple articles just on Census 2020.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite parts about my job is that we get to do these little blogs, because it's side of our other work, and it's kind of whatever we're interested in, and we can kind of dig deep into a topic, and the census is really important, and I you know, wanted to write a few on that and get it out there.
What are you going to write about when the census 2020 is over?
I'm not sure. I'll have to find some other topics, I suppose.
All right, well, we need to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the misconceptions for the census. We'll be right back. And we're back. Thanks for listening today, Sunday morning wake-up call, to talk about Census 2020 with our guest, Spencer Shanholtz from UVA's Weldon Cooper Center. Spencer is a research and policy analyst with the Demographics Group. Does a lot of work on the census, discussing the history and the purpose. Right now, we're going to jump into some of the misconceptions. You were telling us about the questions. They seem pretty basic. The gender, the number, how everybody's related to the folks in the building at the address, right? And that's pretty much it with the current census questions.
Yeah. It's very pretty basic information.
But it's all attached. They know the address of that house.
Mm-hmm.
And some of your article had some misconceptions. Tell us about them.
So one of the big misconceptions, probably the number one one, is that the census is voluntary. That's pretty basic. The census is not voluntary. The census participation is technically required by law. A lot of people think that, oh, I got this form in the mail, this survey, I don't need to fill it out. I'll just, you know, toss it in the trash. I don't need to spend the time on this. But really, it is required by law.
So if I don't fill it out the first time, what happens?
If you don't fill it out the first time, and this year you'll be getting a little card online that will tell you how to fill it out online. If you don't fill that out, they'll send you a reminder, and they'll probably send you another reminder. Then after that, someone has to come out to your house to ask you the questions. A census enumerator will come to your door, knock on your door, and say, "Hey, yeah, you have this form. Do you have a few seconds to fill out the questions? I can do it right here for you."
Census enumerator.
Exactly. And really, you want to respond without that, because the enumerator is just what's the huge cost in the census. So if you're worried about, you know, how much this is costing the government, I think, you know, it's going to cost you nothing to fill out the survey. You don't have to have a stamp anymore. You can do it online. But I think it's considerably more, money for the enumerator to have to come out.
So if there's multiple people in the household and therefore multiple email addresses, where are they getting the email addresses?
So there's not going to be email addresses. The online thing, it will all be sent through mail, because the database that the Census Bureau has of households is physical address. So you'll get a little note card in the mail,
okay,
really small, that'll have a kind of a code and a link.
Yeah.
Go online and fill this out.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's still just being sent to one card, being sent to one physical address.
Because that's the fundamental basis unit of the census count is the household. It'll send, you know, that's how they kind of connect. They'll give you, each household will get a card, and then they will fill it out for the entire household.
Okay. All right. What are some other misconceptions?
The second really big misconception, probably the largest, is that the Census Bureau will share that information that gets given to them with other people. But that's not true at all. It's really written into the U.S. Code, Title 13, that Census Bureau cannot share your information with any other person, any other government agency, not with police, not with ICE. The census, even the census individuals, the enumerators, cannot share that information.
Well, again, you can go to UVA's Walden Cooper Center, which is where Spencer Shanholz, our guest today, is working, to the statchatva.org. And one of the pieces of information that I found there was 78% of folks concerned in some way that census info would be used against them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're not just shared, but used against them.
Exactly. That's one of the huge misconceptions that the census has to get over, and that, you know, people like us that are interested in making sure that the census is successful, getting the word out there that it's not going to be used against you. That Title 13, the sharing with other government agencies or anyone else, not even the Patriot Act can preempt that. That was ruled in the Supreme Court back in the early 1900s.
And I would think that whichever side of the aisle you're currently on, that the current administration has shown its ability to write executive orders to make things happen the way it wants them to happen. And so it feels, the current administration being it, feels that it can write an executive order and say, share the census information with ICE, with local police officers, follow the enumerators in a hidden police vehicle, and deal with the court system later. And some side of the aisle may say, that's awful. And other side would say, great, because that's what we need to happen. I think that's where it may be where the 78% of folks are concerned. Well, maybe not be concerned, but for other reasons, the concerned might fall into it.
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to a general distrust in government, where that number comes from, and the actions of the current administration haven't helped that in any way at all.
But you can go back to a previous administration, mm-hmm. who certainly would have done, and you can change that previous administration and change to a different action and switch aisles. And they would say, well, the previous administration did this, and that's why I have a problem. So you're right. It's government that makes people concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really, you know, if we want to go back to that citizenship question for a second, a lot of the distrust is, you know, with our Hispanic Hispanic population.
Right.
Even before the citizenship question, the Census Bureau has said that they have a hard time getting, you know, Hispanic individuals to respond to the census because they're scared, even before the citizenship question was added. And that leads to an undercount in those people. And those people really, really need to be counted. It's, you know, even if you're a citizen or not, the census needs to count everyone to, you know, really accurately see how many resources, you know, how to distribute our resources.
It is 30 minutes after the hour here today with our guest, Spencer Shanholtz, as we talk about census and census 2020, from the history to the purpose to the misconceptions, and we're getting a little bit into current events and the current administration, talking about undercounts and how the citizenship question may be a part of that coming to take place. Doing part of my homework brought up an interesting bit of info, is that undercounts for a state like Texas, certainly the Hispanic population crossing the border, staying in Texas, whether they're already living in Texas and have been for the past several years, or crossing the border now in the last year or two under the present administration. If you are undercounted because of your fear to give accurate information, the information that I gathered was that an undercount in Texas could result in losses up to $300 million yearly in federal funding. So do you scare? Does Texas scare the Hispanic population so that they don't want to give, a proper number down to an enumerator and respond? Or do they say, no, we're not, believe me, we are not going to turn ICE on you. We just want an accurate number because all that's going to happen is social services are going to need to help you. Other organizations are going to need to help you, and we need the money to make sure that that happens properly.
Exactly. I mean, it really comes down to that latter thing that you said, that fundamentally you would want to count as many people as you can, or as many people that can be accurate, that live in your community, so that you can provide services for those people, and that it really comes down to a local level. How much money that community, that you know, census block, that congressional district gets in funding.
The other bit of that was that an accurate count could give Texas three more House seats, three electoral college votes.
Yeah, and that's huge. You know, Texas is growing greatly, and they're projected, you know, if with an accurate count, to gain three more House seats, which, like you said, translates to election too. You know, that's one other thing that, you know, we don't really think of is when you get a House seat, you get an electoral college vote as well, which is really important in the way our election system works. You know, some other states are projected to grow as well. Florida's expected to gain two. You know, North Carolina, Oregon, all expected to gain a seat. And all that really hinges on, especially in those border states, a lot of that hinges on whether or not we accurately count and people respond to the census.
What is the, other than sending people out repeatedly and not to make it sound, not to simplify it, but writing articles through blog, but to make it sound how important it is, but how do you get people to understand the importance of and need for accuracy?
And that's a huge issue that the Census Bureau is trying to tackle. They have these kind of community organizations called Complete Count Commissions. Virginia has one. And it's really a coalition of local government leaders, business leaders, people that are trustworthy in the community, I guess you could say, or, you know, a little closer to home. That's really where it needs to be known, is, you know, that grassroots level. You know, the work needs to be done there to let people know that it's okay to fill out the census. You're not going to be, you know, it's not going to be used against you. This is why you need to fill it out. You know, that bus route down the street, like that, it comes down to small things like that. You know, how much money you're going to get, social services, you know, what bus routes are going to go where. Are we going to build new schools in this area or not? You know, if you really need to tie those together.
Yeah, part of the history goes back to this is the census was used for spreading funds, correct? For schools and other infrastructure.
Yeah, not only, you know, the original purpose, like we said, the constitutional purpose of the census data is to apportion House seats, to create those districts and to distribute funding to the states. But the information that comes from the census is used in a lot more ways. All of the statistics are published, you know, online, and that's a lot of the data that we work with at the Cooper Center to create our population projections. The same data is used by local planning commissions to decide where they want to put their schools, where they want to, you know, put new roads, fire stations, all of that things. So it really kind of ripples down.
Again, our guest today is Spencer Shanholtz from UVA's Walden Cooper Center as we talk about the census and census 2020. One piece of information that caught my eye was that an estimated 5% of children under 5 are not counted or were not counted in the 2010 census. Approximately 1 million. Why is that?
That's a persistent problem that's kind of plagued the census for a long time. That 5% of children under 5, they did an in-depth study that this past period between since the 2010 census, and most of that 5% under 5 are economically disadvantaged. So it comes down to the parent or the householder that gets the form not knowing how to correctly fill out that person. They don't think they need to put a child that young on their form and just not putting it. Also, at, you know, economically, that at that lower economic range, you know, that child might be living with a grandparent. you know, that grandparent doesn't know if I should put them on my form, or, you know, might be a single parent and might kind of be, you know, migrating around. So there's a lot of problems that kind of come into that that make it difficult to count accurately children under five.
When you say living with a grandparent, are you saying that the grandparent doesn't know whether or not to list them as their living in their household or their responsibility?
Yeah, because when you look at the census form, it's going to ask you where does, you know, you only count people that live here most of the time, and that's kind of what it leaves it at. So if the grandparent or the parent is unsure, like, well, I don't know where they are most of the time, maybe, you know, my mother will put my child on the list or something, you know, or the grandparent's like, I don't know if this is really where they live all the time, or I'm not sure if they're going to be living here all the time.
Right. I'm not counting days and I have 37% and somebody else has 32%.
Mm-hmm. So that all of those things kind of lead to that undercount.
But has there been a change in effort to correct the problem for 2020?
Similar with the outreach, like we talked about before, they're trying to, you know, push the outreach, because that's what it comes down to, is education, is just letting people know how to accurately fill out the form.
Again, our guest, Spencer Shanholtz. Is there a... we have a day for everything. You know, there's Hamburger Day and Arbor Day and Grandparents Day. Is there Census Day? You know, is that the day we're supposed to fill it out and return it?
Yeah, so Census Day is April 1st, the 2020. It's not the day you're going to have to fill it out. It's, you're going to get it probably in early March. Census Day is kind of designated as, if you're not sure where you live most of the time, just wherever you are on Census Day is what you put on your form. That's kind of the fundamental purpose behind that. But it's also used in publicity as well.
Okay. So if the child is wherever they're sleeping on April 1st, use that if you're unsure?
I think that's kind of the ultimate thing, is if you don't know, just do that. You know, that's at least a good stopgap.
Okay. All right, we are talking about Census 2020 with research and policy analyst Spencer Shanholtz. Let's take a break. And back in action with our guest today, Spencer Shanholtz. You know, we were talking earlier, Spencer, about some of the previous censuses. That is the proper word, correct? Censuses?
I think so. That's how I say it. I'm not the grammar.
It's not sensei or anything. In 1790, some of the first U.S. censuses took 18 months to complete. Results were used to establish the size of the House of Representatives. Enslaved people were counted as 3/5 of a person until after the Civil War, and Native Americans weren't counted at all until 1860. And then 1850 and 1860 counts, anti-slavery campaigners used data from two consecutive U.S. censuses to build support for abolition by showing that the number of enslaved people in the United States is rising, contrary to arguments made by pro-slavery politicians.
Yeah, just good examples of how census data can be used for multiple different things.
Yeah. Green card workers or illegal workers get counted? I mean, if you're a migrant worker working on a farm, et cetera, you know,
mm-hmm.
Do you get counted?
You are counted. That everyone, the census counts everyone that is in the United States, whether or not you're a citizen or not. Everyone who spends majority of their time in the United States, who lives, sleeps.
All right. How do you know that folks are not counted twice?
So that's difficult. We talked about an undercount, but really the census overcounts a lot of people as well. it typically overcounts majorities, typically overcounts, you know, white individuals, whereas it overcounts minorities. A lot of the, there's a lot of statistical models that go into making sure that you're not over double counted. But the double counting does show up a lot of place times when, you know, we have multiple homes, or, you know, I live in more than one place.
So for folks who have, their, regular house in Albemarle and their winter ski home in Vail, they're going to get a card, in Vail as well. And,
likely they'll get two, one in each place. And, you know, that's why it has the instructions at the beginning saying, where do you live most of the time? Only fill out one of these. And then after, if they were to fill out both and send them both in, kind of leaves it up to the statistical magic at the Census Bureau, the algorithms, to kind of weed that out and say, oh, wait a minute, we have two of these people. But again, that doesn't always happen, leading to an overcount in a lot of those populations.
Are there, other than these sorts of tricks, I mean, we've talked about undercounting, and I'm sure that there are other issues, and I might stumble across a question in our last segment, and these sort of overcounting issues. Are there other concerns about 2020 accuracy? Is there any cybersecurity issues to worry about?
Yeah, I mean, this is the first digital census, like I mentioned before a little bit. The primary method of response is going to be online. They're expecting most people to fill that out online. And even with the enumerators that are going to be coming out for people that don't fill it online, they're going to be using iPads, smartphones to be getting your answers to put all this into, you know, kind of a digital database. So naturally, there are some concerns over, you know, scams, people saying, you know, you get the spam email. Hey, this is the census, you know, you come and fill out this thing.
Make sure to enter your social security number so that I know that it's you.
Exactly. And that's what the Census Bureau is saying. Like, if we're not going to ask for your social security number, please do not. We're not going to email you at all.
We don't want your phone number.
Exactly.
We don't want your social security number. We do not need your bank deposit number.
Exactly. So there's some concerns about that. And then there's also cybersecurity concerns, you know, especially with foreign actors. You know, in the past election, we had a lot of issues with that. And there's some people that are saying, even within the Census Bureau, that could be a potential target, you know, to kind of cause disruption in the U.S. and confusion.
And suddenly the state of California has only five people living in it. It
yeah.
needs no representation.
Exactly, yeah.
And you said something during the break about, did you say poor testing?
Yeah, so this kind of comes down to back to the funding a little bit. The past, you know, gap between 2010 and 2020, the ramp up in the funding for the census happened way later than it should have. It happened only 2 or 3 years before, whereas it should have started happening 5 years before. So thus, the Census Bureau would normally, before a census, would have 4 or 5 end-to-end tests. So they would take a place and they would, you know, kind of do a full-fledged test in the census and their system and all that. This past cycle, they only got to do one, and they did it in Rhode Island, which is really not very representative of the whole country. They ended up scrapping two others. One was to test rural areas, because that's another place where undercounts usually happen, and they were specifically concerned about the online response in rural areas. And then the other one was, Spanish language response. They were going to do one more focused on that, and those two were scrapped, mostly due to the funding coming too late.
Back to some of our current events. You were talking about the citizenship question. Can you talk about the history of that? Did it just start, you know, the several months before it went to the court system?
So a lot of this has come out since the citizenship questions you know, been proposed, you know, people saying, well, it used to be on the census, and it did. Some form of a citizenship question was asked during every census between 1820 and 1950. However, the phrasing and really the intent of those past questions were a lot different than now, as was the political climate. You know, a question directly asking every household whether every resident is a citizen has never been included. These citizenship questions, per se, in the past were sporadic, really asked only of certain groups, and were sometimes accompanied by additional questions asking about, are you trying to become a citizen? You know, we want you to become a citizen, more along those lines. Another one, for instance, in 1890, specified that only males of foreign birth who are 21 years and older were asked whether they were naturalized or whether they had taken out papers to become naturalized. So you can see there's all these like weird phrasings, but never asking directly if you are, you know, a citizen or not.
Right. So there's a difference when the commentary is made about, hey, we've asked this question before. That's not quite true.
Yeah. In a past census asked of everyone, we don't really have never really asked that specifically. Again, this citizenship question is asked today on many other surveys that the Census Bureau and other agencies do, but never of every single person. So like the ACS, the American Community Survey, like I mentioned before, ever since it was started in 2005 or 2006, it is always asked whether or not you're a citizen or not. And again, that's a survey. It's only asked to one out of every 38 households. And that is the data that we use to enforce the Voting Act. Which brings up another issue of why the Supreme Court shot that question down, is like, we don't need more data. We have a good idea of that, to enforce that. There's no need for us to ask everyone else. That was just a piece of the ruling, I believe.
You talk about various versions of that question being asked in previous centuries, in previous decades. There was some sort of question, I note, asked to subsets of the population between 1970 and 2000. But I don't know what question was asked in 2000. Do you have that note?
I'm not familiar with specifically what questions were asked in those years. I know, like I said, during the Great Depression or during other specific, they've asked additional questions. Sometimes they're economic related. Sometimes they have been, you know, it's a little more detail, you know, what's your marital status or things like that. But I'm not 100%.
Was anything
sure
ever asked during the McCarthy era?
I'm not sure about that either. About immigration, I'm assuming.
Well, I was thinking when everyone was concerned about people being communist, I didn't know if that ever happened during a census time period.
Yeah, not that I know of.
All right. Again, Spencer Shanholz here today. Are there specific states that are excited or concerned about the census for representation issues or dollar getting better federal funding or losing funding?
Yeah, like I said, you know, Texas is projected to gain
three. We talked about Texas and Florida and North Carolina, but keep going.
There's a lot of states that are concerned that they're probably going to lose a seat. A lot of this is expected to occur in the Midwest and northeastern sections, and that comes down to population loss. Those northern areas are losing population, while a lot of the southern parts of the United States are gaining, which is a whole other conversation. But you know, single seat losses are expected to be in Alabama, Illinois, Michigan, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, West Virginia. Those are some of the projected states that are projected to lose seats if there is an accurate count.
And so then we go back to accuracy again.
Mm-hmm.
It seems where we always,
yeah,
the circle always goes back to accuracy. Again, Spencer Shanholz from UVA's Weldon Cooper Center. You know, we've been talking for 50 plus minutes, and we've not even touched on gerrymandering. This program, Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, has done several shows on gerrymandering. But even when the counts, whether they're accurate or inaccurate, once your numbers are given to you, whether Virginia has 13 seats or I guess Virginia has been somewhat stagnant over the years. You have another map on the statchatva.org that shows Virginia stays in that static gray color for decades while others go yellow and blue?
I think so. I can't remember the exact colors, but yeah, some are gaining and some are losing.
Right, but you have a color that shows states losing population and others gaining population.
Yeah.
And Virginia stays the same.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't show how your areas are divided. But then you have another one that does show how they're divided, and you look at them and they're so crazily divided up.
Yeah.
And all this is the gerrymandering that goes on, and of course now there are several cases before the courts to determine that and talk about it. What do the states do with the numbers once they get them for dividing them internally?
So the states will get the numbers. It's by December of 2020 will be the last time, will be when they're required to have those numbers. And like you said, it comes down to how that individual state divvies out those districts, which is a whole nother topic. But most of them, the legislature puts them out, kind of divides them up, and sometimes they look kind of crazy depending on who controls the legislature.
Well, Creed Deeds was on the hour before us, and he has a wacky district, and it's just nuts. But is there expectation that Virginia will keep the same numbers again this year?
There is. Virginia's expected to keep, like I said, kind of keep the same number of districts. So that kind of comes down to the Virginia level. We are gaining in our urban crescent, I guess you could say, which is Nova, Northern Virginia,
and the Tidewater,
Richmond,
area.
Tidewater. We are gaining in those areas. We are losing in the rural areas, which is a lot of issues that are kind of coming together with those things. But over and all, we're going to keep the same amount of seats.
Okay. And so when will the cards go out? Did you say March?
You can expect to see these cards in your mail mid to early March. And then, you'll get some follow-ups. And then after that, if you're not responding, people will come out and see you.
How does that happen?
So if you don't respond and you don't respond to the follow-up, an enumerators will come knock on your door. Said, hey, have you filled out the census? We haven't gotten it from you. I can do it right here for you on my phone. There'll also be other options. I know libraries and such are supposed to be having kiosks to fill it out there as well. So,
could be. But for those people who have little to no intent on filling one out, what's that last step?
The last step is if the enumerator comes out, you don't answer your door, such and such. The enumerators will ask your neighbors about you, just at least get a count, not to really get any information. We just want to know how many people live in this house or who lives there. They can look at postal records, those types of things, just to try and get some sort of picture that we can use as an estimate to fill in the blanks.
Okay. But April 1st is Census Day.
April 1st is Census Day, and you can expect a big publicity push.
The information will not be shared with the government other than the basics of who lives there, how many people.
Mm-hmm. No identifiable.
No identifiable. Yeah. And don't let anybody reach out to you who wants your Social Security number, right?
Exactly.
Spencer Shanholz from UVA's Walden Cooper Center. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Next week, Robin Jackson, as we talk about manners and civility. All right, everybody. Have a great Sunday.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC-LP, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Engineering assistance was by my friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SevillePodcast.com. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.